Vistara has got itself into an absolute mess.
Vistara flights have been facing unprecedented delays. Multiple flights have been delayed across sectors.
Vistara, with the pilot crisis that continues, 25 flights have been impacted since early this morning.
It's not just about talking to customers and apologizing to them. As of today, we are sending out individual emails to each of the customers affected. It's not just about refunds. That's something that we will, of course, do. We are also going to provide them with compensation.
Vistara will cut about 30 flights a day in all of April. This means a little under 1,000 flights of Vistara will be cancelled in this month.
The airline's pilots are unhappy with a new salary contract that effectively reduces the take-home pay of several junior pilots by more than 30%. Many of them have stayed away from work, forcing the airline to cut flights. Well, there seems to be bad planning on Vistara's part too, because it rostered pilots and crew to their maximum possible utilization levels, leaving very little room to maneuver in contingency situations like these. The impasse led the airline to ultimately cut 10% or 25 to 30 of its daily flights. Now, Vistara controls 10% of the domestic aviation market. Its flight cancellations have cut supply at a time when summer travel demand is rising, as are airfares. The Vistara mess speaks to a larger problem of its integration with Tata's now umbrella airline entity Air India, which itself has grappled with staff problems for the largest part of its existence. And this is definitely not a global first. It in fact harks back to integration problems that global airlines have faced in their mergers and purchases of other airlines through global aviation history. Seen another way, it is the latest in a long line of niggles that the Tatas have faced in their biggest purchases across industries, from Chorus to JLR. So will the current mess at Vistara become worse before it resolves itself? And what lessons can the Tatas derive from their own previous integration stories and those of airlines across the world? We discuss all this and more in today's episode. It's Thursday, the 11th of April. I'm your host, Anirban Chaudhary. This is The Morning Brief.
So it started around from mid-March. There were complaints on social media coming out that Vistara flights are getting delayed. I think around 14th or 15th of March, one day, almost 10, 12 departures got cancelled out of Mumbai, and that created a lot of noise.
That's Arindam Majumdar, my colleague and ET's aviation expert. Vistara initially blamed the cancellations on unseasonal rains that had thrown its schedules awry.
But when the last of March, I think March 30 was a Saturday. Saturday morning, there are a number of Vistara cancellations. It started with delays, basically. Flights were getting delays beyond 3-4 hours, and airport services had no reasons to offer to their customers. So, of course, social media started getting flooded. And by night of Saturday, it reached a crescendo because, like, at that point of time, a lot of flights had got delayed. Vistara had to accommodate. And being a small airline, it barely flights, 350 flights per day. Like, it had little room to recoup from there. So obviously, like, when you disrupt your schedule one day, next day it blows over. The pilots also had reached to their extent of flight duty limit that the DGCA pilot rest and rules. So it had to cancel flights. Then the management came out and said that, yes, there is an issue of unavailability of crew and we are trying to look up to that. But cancellations followed, and ultimately the airline took a call that the only way to get it back on track to reduce customer complaint was to take a sizable cut in their flight numbers.
So the airline was compelled to cut its flights by a tenth. That took it to its flight capacity of February 2024. Now, Vistara's hoping that these cuts will make it tide through the crisis, but it's important to analyze the main problem first.
So the main reason lies in Vistara not having a buffer in the size of the crew. Pilots were already flying to their maximum extent. they were complaining for smaller bases like Calcutta. For the non-Delhi Bombay bases, basically, they were staying out of home for almost 3-4 days continuous. Like they're not being able to get so disruptive was the schedule. And of course, when the complaints piled up and this restructuring of contract, which is getting it down from 70 hours fixed pay to 40 hours fixed pay, added fuel to the fire. But what happens is that at the end of the merge, there are always sick leaves, and it is not a new phenomenon. Like every profession, pilots also have their share of their sick leaves, and which are not utilized. But according to Vistara policy, this has to be exhausted by March because it's not carry forward to April. And like an airline, say Indigo, which distributes this across throughout the year, like they, if a number of pilots will take, they can exhaust their sick leave by March, by April, May, June. So everyone has their separate deadlines. In Vistara, for everyone, it's March. And they, of course, like upset at the contract, they started non-cooperating with the management.
So Arindam, what's the pilots' problems with the contract?
Many first officers told me that they're losing out almost, like right now, what they earn by flying 70 hours in the new contract, in which fixed hours is for 40 hours and then you get paid for overtime, they would have to fly 80 hours to earn that much what they're earning now. And also the disruptive schedules also was not a very encouraging factor. So they start picking calls from rostering and scheduling department. Now, that is a disaster. Like, number one, it was March and there are many sick leaves. Then suddenly, and Vistara, as I said before, were utilizing their crew to the maximum extent. And when this non-cooperation kind of thing, so, okay, I'll not fly beyond what is my duty roster, that kind of thing comes, that was the push to the show. And most of the first officers, by virtue of, again, this neck-to-neck contract, had flown to the maximum extent of 100 hours. Like under the DGCA rules, you can fly maximum 100 hours a month, and most had already done 90, 95 hours. So Vistara had little room to fill up for that gap. So they had no other option but to cancel flight.
Arindam, would you call this a planning problem within Vistara only or a larger integration problem with Air India also?
Most were integration problem. Anirban, you have seen before also in case of Jet Sahara merger or Kingfisher and Deccan merger. When a company is getting merged into other company, the company which is getting merged kind of feels lost. And out here in Vistara, when there is a sunset clause kind of given, like beyond 2025, the brand don't exist anymore. So the confusion creeps in, like, what should I do? What will be my position in the next organization? Is there any outlook for my company now? Because everyone works for appraisal and everyone works for their own betterment of career now. And when they know that their company is getting merged into, there is, I think, some kind of aloofness that creeps in. Also, there's this matter of cost control. Like this entire integration plan by the Tatas to consolidate their aviation business, which have not made money almost for the last one decade. So clearly there was a direction given from Bombay House that there's a need for cost control. And of course, it's not for Air India to do the cost control now, which is on a growth spree. Vistara, it has to do kind of, because even for Vistara, it has not broken even for the last, since they started business. So there was a direction given that cost has to be looked at seriously. I think that's where the directions came in, and certain managers felt that controlling cost would earn them kind of brownie points in the integrated organization. So probably the pilot hirings and the pilot trainings were not up to that level as Vistara would have liked to have as an airline which stands as a service standard.
How do you see this aggravating? Also, I mean, it isn't something that has happened with Vistara a lot, to give it due credit. Although, I mean, of course, it's fairly common in other organizations undergoing a transition, right?
I think it happens with every organization, A, organization B, like the people chart their own future course. Like, I'm sure there are people in Vistara who are questioning what will be their positions in the integrated organization. That certainty has definitely not been given, and there are reasons for it. I think the clearer picture of merger is still not clear. It's when the two companies gets merged, only then the roles will have to be divided. So,
yeah. And we've seen some exits, right? Top and middle management, we've already seen some exits.
Yeah, correct. There have been quite a few exits. And as I said, like, people will feel lost. Like, I know of a vice president who have quit the company because he saw no role for himself in the integrated organization. It's a pitfall, and it's the fallout of any kind of mergers that happen. We see it everywhere across the world.
Indeed, we do. And there are lessons to be learned from the biggest and some of the most problematic airline integrations in the world. Here's John Strickland, a London-based aviation expert and founder of JLS Consulting.
Well, I would start by saying, Anupam, we can never underestimate the cultural and human aspects of any merger between two companies. It's never just about spreadsheet calculations and so-called synergies, because human beings are not as neat and tidy as spreadsheets can be. And we're talking about culture clashes, expectation, style of management, and all of those things pose problems. And I'll give you some examples, one substantial one from the UK in history and a couple from my own personal experience. If we think of British Airways today, its predecessor going back to the early 1970s were actually two airlines, BOAC, which was the global long-haul airline, and BEA, which was a European airline. Those two airlines merged, and it was a real clash of cultures, actually reflecting British social strata. BOAC was seen as the airline of the public school boys, and BEA was seen as that of grammar school, state education employees. And there was absolute mistrust between the two breeds. So to come on to that second point, around about 1988, British Airways bought an independent private airline for which I worked called British Caledonian. And they wanted to eliminate that company's identity as quickly as possible. The airline had a very strong Scottish identity. It featured tartan in its cabin crew uniform. It had a Scottish lion on the tail. British Airways wanted to eliminate that and make it all appear as one airline as quickly as possible. British Airways wanted to merge. British Caledonian had to merge. They were trying to win hearts and minds, but it was indeed a big challenge.
And what about Air France-KLM? That's one of the most problematic integrations in the world, right? In fact, one of its foremost firefighting leaders is now heading India's biggest airline by market share. John?
Well, KLM was the last airline that I actually worked for prior to establishing my consultancy. And as you say, Peter Elbers, now the CEO of the large and successful IndiGo in India. And when that merger happened between Air France and KLM, indeed, Air France was really the major player. They were effectively buying KLM. And I know to this day, having worked there for a long period of time, there's still a good deal of bitterness, because KLM was a very dynamic airline. If we think about the small scale of the Dutch market, and KLM punching way above its weight in terms of its global network and passengers making connections through its Amsterdam hub, it was fused with the relatively inefficient, regularly strike-prone Air France. And those people in KLM were thinking, we're supposed to now go along with what Air France says, but they haven't got a clue compared to us. That would be the mentality. I think things have changed dramatically. Of course, Peter's moved on to run IndiGo. Ben Smith, who's come in, interestingly, as a non-Frenchman, that's very important in the context of this French airline, to run the whole group, and has done a lot to bring the two companies closer together, because they were effectively running as two separate airlines in many respects for a long time, with, again, this challenge of mistrust and indeed resentment.
And if we look across the Atlantic?
Of course, the first big merger leading to today's combination of airlines was that between Delta Northwest Airlines. That was seen as a relatively smooth integration. But then following ones between United and Continental and American Airlines and US Airways was seen as much more difficult. And indeed, even today, we see problems lingering on the staff front, particularly in the American Airlines context.
Yes. So I'm glad you brought us to the staff integration bit. You know, pilot integration seems to have been an issue in United Continental merger as well. What do you think were the 3-4 mistakes, if I may call it, or challenges that they couldn't have foreseen, or lessons that are to be learned from these mergers which faced people integration issues?
If we look in the past, the pilot workforce is a particularly sensitive and complicated one to integrate in any situation of a merger, because pilots, of course, have some of the strongest, if not the strongest, voices when it comes to bargaining power and union representation in airlines. That means their union representatives will negotiate them, understandably, the best possible deals, not only in terms of pay, but in terms of seniority of pilots, getting benefits for length of service, not again only in pay, but in terms of which routes they fly, which aircraft they operate on, and there's a whole seniority structure. So that's complicated enough to manage even within one airline. Then try to fuse that type of legal background and work agreements between two airlines, and it can be a potential nightmare. It really means that management has to tread very delicately. It requires the application of a great deal of expertise and recognizing the sensitivity between different cultures. And again, the challenge of mistrust. And in the case of Air India, which of course is an airline of many, many decades standing compared to the pretty young Vistaris, we're naturally going to come across different agreements, not only in terms of these issues of seniority, but there'll be very big differences in terms of operating conditions, work conditions and flexibility. And that itself is what we're seeing coming to the surface now.
Well, John, in the particular case of this episode, a smaller airline is being subsumed into a larger one. Are there many examples of that in aviation history?
It's harder to say where we've seen small airlines kind of benefit large airlines when mergers happen. The challenge often we have seen is that the benefits, the flexibilities, the dynamism of small airlines end up being lost because it's usually the bigger airline making the move. An exception, and it's more extreme, is that the final airline that I worked for, it was a subsidiary of the KLM Group, a low-cost airline in the UK called Buzz, was bought by Ryanair just over 20 years ago. And Ryanair moved very quickly there to eliminate everything about the airline. They simply dispensed with the entire workforce, including myself, apart from a few safety authority positions, such as the flight ops director, engineering director, and so on, that were required. They got rid of the name and everything straight away, fused it all into Ryanair, and effectively all they'd bought was slots at an airport. There wasn't all that challenge of having to absorb a different culture. And I think this is also why Michael O'Leary, the boss of Ryanair, has said they're not interested in going through other mergers because it's too messy, too costly in management time and complication from a human element to do that. And we had the situation also where EasyJet bought a British Airways low-cost airline called Go. That took a long time to integrate as well. And again, they learned lessons from that, felt they would prefer to avoid doing that type of thing again if possible.
There are lessons to be had closer home too, in Tata's own big buys and the problems in the integration that followed. Here's Mahantesh Sabarath, an independent analyst who spent 8 years in Tata Motors in the initial phase of his career. He was then Vice President of Centrum Broking, Senior Vice President at Fortune Equity Brokers, and Head of Retail Research at SBI Securities.
So firstly, when Tata's went ahead and acquired Corus and also JLR, these were very big ticket acquisitions from the Tata Group. Not just the Tata Group, but I can recall that these were very big acquisitions by any Indian company abroad. So what the typical challenges that they faced in terms of running these companies was to really get into a company or get into a set of companies that were more modern, more ahead in terms of what they were delivering in the marketplace in terms of their products, innovation, or what have you. So the first challenge for the Tata Group was to absorb, assimilate whatever the technologies these companies had and understand them very thoroughly. The second challenge, I would put it, was quite frankly from a financial point of view, because both these companies came with their legacy kind of got costs, not necessarily debt, but legacy costs, because JLR was acquired as a debt-free company, whereas Corus came on with small amounts of debt. But this was the second challenge. Financially speaking, the challenge was on the legacy cost that these companies had. And the third challenge was from a cultural point of view to integrate these companies into the Indian ways of doing things. After all, these were British companies who weren't accustomed to the Indian sort of way of doing business.
Mahantesh, Air India does come with a lot of legacy issues, right? Primarily manifesting itself in manpower integration. So how does that compare with Tata's other purchases and integrations?
So being British companies, both these companies had huge debt obligations and legacy costs linked to employees and pension funds. So Chorus, for example, had a large pension fund liability and funding arrangement or obligations with the British Steel pension funds. Likewise, JLR had its own pension schemes that needed to be funded periodically. And the second part was to actually work with a workforce, which was at that point in time, quite frankly, oversized workforce from a point of view of efficiency. So the delivery in terms of output was poor and the workforce was a little overbloated. Something similar we found with Air India as well to begin with.
Absolutely. So, I mean, Chorus, of course, for the longest time was an albatross around the Tata Group's neck, while JLR, as we all know, is the story of a stellar turnaround. How can the conglomerate make sure that Air India is the latter and not the former in terms of integration?
So one of the integration lessons, and which we didn't touch upon, was that the Tata Group management actually relied on a lot of foreign executive talent to really grow their business worldwide, which meant that they imported, or if I can use that word, they imported foreign talent into the Indian companies, which was not really, really needed because there was ample talent within India. The solution is that when there is a cultural integration issue that we have repeatedly seen with Tata's acquisition abroad, or the way Tata's function with other acquisitions or in JVs, then one should look and put one's foot down and say, no, we will have an Indian talent who know the Tata's way of working to really run these management. And efficiency is not something which is foreign to Indian talent. They do know how to run efficient organizations. Tata's themselves have had for decades run very successful businesses, grown them quite large. And quite frankly, they could have, instead of over-relying or over-depending on foreign talent, worked with Indian talent and groomed them suitably to take on the challenges that these integrations presented, the cultural challenges that these integrations presented.
When it was decided that Air India would eventually be merged with Vistara, a company insider had quipped that it was like merging Doordarshan with Netflix. The current problems at Vistara should take just weeks to solve. But Air India's legacy problems are a different matter. It has always been a company riddled with manpower issues. They were aggravated manyfold when it was merged with its domestic counterpart Indian Airlines in 2007. The airline grappled with an inflated workforce, HR parity issues and union problems for years before it was finally sold to the Tata Group. Many of those problems have been solved, but many remain. Just a few months earlier, social media was rife with videos of Air India employees being evacuated from their houses in Kalina in suburban Mumbai. This real estate bit was not part of the Air India deal and went to the airport, hence the evacuation. Now there are reports that technicians at an erstwhile Air India engineering unit may strike work soon. Vistara's cut-to-cut rostering was the result of cost-cutting measures, as Arindam told me. The airline has not made a profit yet, and Air India too has been making massive losses for more than a decade. Of course, the solution to the manpower problems lies in bringing all employees under one cohesive structure, which the Tata Group is trying very hard to do. But it also lies in profitable growth and expansion, which is still several years away. Also, with the industry veering towards a virtual oligopoly, these niggles in one airline has a cascading effect on flight schedules, fares, and overall morale in the pilot and crew community industry-wide. Also, don't forget that this comes at a time when many other airlines have had to undertake forced capacity cuts due to issues at their aircraft and engine suppliers. All in all, there seem to be many more allied and direct problems ahead before the Tatas can build a cohesive, formidable, integrated airline entity. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Vinay Joshi, sound designed by Rajas Naik, Indranil Bhattacharjee and Amrit Riji. The Morning Brief drops every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday and Friday on a listening platform of your choice. Keep listening. From the Economic Times, this is Anirban Chaudhary signing off. Have a good week ahead. All external clips used in this episode belong to their respective owners. Credits are mentioned in the description.